Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all. A minute and so past the hour, past 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. Welcome to this evening's edition of Conversation Radio from wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. Looking forward to hitting a lot of topics this evening, many of them of your choosing, some of mine. I've been... Over the last few days, I've been reading a few articles, what little information is getting out about the, what's the official word for it? Yes, the unrest in Xinjiang province, China, and in the capital there, Urumqi. Far in the west of the People's Republic of China, where the Chinese government for years, as they have done in Tibet, have been engaged in a process of depopulation and relocation, in effect attempting a slow and quiet genocide of the Uyghurs, for whom that is their native land. They're accomplishing this by dispossessing Uyghurs, as well as by moving in vast numbers of traditional, what we tend to think of as traditional, racially Han Chinese settlers. And apparently the Uyghurs, by virtue of an unfortunate incident in a sweatshop somewhere in, I believe, Guangdong province, simply had enough and began manifesting their displeasure with the way they were being treated. Because there is something essentially wrong. I think it strikes the human spirit as violative whenever we see ethnic groups of people simply being erased and displaced by another group. What? You used to live here? Not anymore. We're going to build us some new towns. They're going to be our towns. You can go somewhere else. Right? Yeah. And so, if nothing else, mark my objection to the displacement and the diminution, the deliberate diminution of the genetics of what are referred to as the Uyghur people in Western China. Information coming out of Western China has been sketchy, to say the least. The Associated Press reporting yesterday that thousands of Chinese Red Army troops have poured into Urumqi, China. That's the capital city of Xinjiang. And they are ostensibly trying to separate the feuding Han and Uyghur peoples. The Uyghurs, you see, are now a minority in their own capital city. There are 2.3 million people in Urumqi. Less than 1.65 million of them are Uyghur. Marauding groups of vigilantes carrying sticks and clubs are going through the traditionally Muslim Uyghur neighborhoods, rousing and beating members of that ethnic group, the Uyghurs. They're being tormented for being Uyghur, and they're being tormented for being Muslim. Chinese President Hu Jintao has left Italy, where he was supposed to participate in the Group of Eight summit. There was considerable embarrassment over his having to do that. At least 140 people were killed at one stroke on Sunday. 140 Uyghurs, their bodies were tossed into trucks and taken away by Chinese security forces. Still, despite that reporting, information is sparse coming out of the region. People's Republic of China not wanting the rest of the world to see what is going on, the trouble they have maintaining order among their subjugated peoples. As Americans, of course, we have lost we didn't lose it. We know where it went and we know who took it. But over the last 9 years, we have ceded the moral high ground in being able to complain about conduct like this by virtue of what we, in turn, have done to the peoples of Afghanistan and Iraq, and to a certain extent, Pakistan. And it is a hallmark of all of these uprisings, whether it be unrest in Urumqi, Xinjiang, China, or in the streets of Tehran, that an authoritarian government aided by elements of the civilian population do all they can to quash information contrary to the official party line. We know, of course, that it happens as well in North Korea. There are many, many countries on the face of this planet, sadly, where people do not enjoy freedom of association and do not enjoy freedom of expression. It's one of those things that kind of makes the horn special. And it makes what is left of our freedom of expression in this country all the more precious. But you know what? You know what's sad? North Korea, China, Iran. Add to that list of places and governments on the map in the world where one may not freely espouse one's views. Add West Virginia to that list. Would you do me a favor and do that, please? Yeah, because it's true. I had not made any mention of it yet because... I suspected something like this was in the offing. But there is a brilliant new documentary out. It is by a West Virginia filmmaker by the name of Mary Lynn Evans. And she has produced a documentary, a visual portrait of the Civil War that is brewing in southern West Virginia. It is called Coal Country. It is my understanding that it will air on PBS. Arrangements had been made for the world premiere of Coal Country to be taking place this weekend at a facility called the LaBelle Theater in South Charleston, West Virginia. That is not going to happen. on the heels of their vile, hateful, militant, threatening, bloodthirsty conduct at Marsh Fork Elementary and Cayford Mountain, threats were passed along to the people who run the LaBelle Theater that if they dared to show Mary Lynn Evans's Coal Country, that the Friends of Coal would make trouble for them. As a result, the historic LaBelle Theater contacted Ms. Evans and told her that she and her documentary were no longer welcome and that the film would not be screened there. Now, bear in mind, everything that I have read and heard in the way of advance notice on this film, this is no radical film. This is a film about reality in southern West Virginia and in central Appalachia and what natives here face as a result of mountain removal. There are no cries for vengeance or bloodshed. It is just facts. But that's the problem, you see. The Friends of Coal cannot contend with facts. They do not want, you know, just as the communists in China do not want information about their shabby dealings with one of their provinces leaking out to the world, just as the mullahs in Iran do not want evidence of their crimes against their own people being aired before a world sitting in judgment, just as the regime in North Korea keeps a tight lid on all information in and out of that beleaguered, pathetic country, so too must the coal industry do everything in its power to prevent you or anyone else outside Appalachia from learning more about the dirty little secret that is mountain removal and what they are doing to this region. Man, kind of drives home the point that I've been trying to make for so long, that Appalachian people aren't really fully American, doesn't it? Really puts a fine point on the argument that I've made over the years that West Virginia and other portions of central Appalachia that produce coal are not treated as fully functioning members of the nation, but rather as resource colonies. There is, we hope, a little bit of good news out of this story. Mary Lynn Evans announced earlier today that an agreement had been reached with the West Virginia Cultural Center in Charleston and the screening of Coal Country is now scheduled to take place at 8 p.m. at the Cultural Center on Saturday evening. Now, that announcement only came out a few hours ago, less than 6 hours ago, I do believe. And it remains to be seen. I have not seen or heard yet of what the Friends of Coal are announcing that they intend to do in response. to the announcement that the film will be screened. I will try to keep you posted as best I can. But we're going to be there. We will be there plenty early. Seating is limited. It's not the biggest auditorium in West Virginia. And it's entirely likely that the Friends of Cole might attempt to show up and take all the seats and then throw eggs at the screen. Or poo. I don't know. That's how they behave. So I'll let you know on Monday how it went. But it's sad, isn't it? It is, and I don't mean to start you out with, oh, God, he's doing it again. What a bummer Bob is. That's not my intent. But the fact of the matter is, we've just got done celebrating Independence Day. And Independence Day, while celebrated, has never been fully manifested in the coal fields of Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee. There is no freedom wherever coal is. Coal was, the extraction of coal was birthed in slavery. Real, literal slavery. Human bondage and servitude. As Jeff Biggers has noted on a number of occasions, some of the very first coal miners in Appalachia were African slaves who were driven into the holes to bring out coal for the master. After that little dust-up between 1860 and 1865, others were sent into the holes. White Appalachians, hillbillies, dispossessed of their lands by timber, railroad, and coal companies, reduced to poverty unless they, too, followed into the hole. Paid not even in American money, but in company scrip that was no good anywhere else but for the purchase of goods at inflated prices at the company store. Not free to move about, not free to go and come as they please, not free even to choose who sat at their dinner table. No, I think one may say that with regard to certain portions of West Virginia, we never have been free from the moment that this state was founded onward. And we are not free now. And we have no political representation. And that is why the activism that is going on here has to be supported by activism outside this state. Activism towards your own elected representatives. We must have your help. Imagine, we do not even have the right to screen a film without threats of violence. We do not have the right to gather peaceably on the ball field of an elementary school, the playground, without violence. We do not have the right to gather peacefully mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers, infants, children, neighbors, students. We don't have the freedom to gather to mark Independence Day without being attacked by thugs from the coal industry. And I know what the coal industry is up to, because they, just as they have no new ideas for an economy for Appalachia, they have no new ideas for dealing with unrest. Less than 100 years ago, about 90 years ago, there was a young union movement, a union movement in its infancy in southern West Virginia, and the coal companies declared them out-of-state radicals, communists, communist sympathizers, and murdered them outright, tormented their families, assaulted their wives and children, and first and foremost, did everything in their power to drive those working people to violence. Early attempts at union organization decried violence, and long before there was ever movement toward civil rights, there was nonviolent advocacy in the coal fields of West Virginia. Time and time again, the organizing coal workers were told, do not respond to violence with violence. Because if you do, they will then have the excuse they need to squash you like a bug. And for a time it held, but not for very much of a time. In the first decade of the 20th century, there was violence in the New River coal fields. And by 90 years ago, it erupted in Mingo County, Logan, Kanawha, Fayette, McDowell. And the miners, the working people, finally started shooting back. It culminated in the Battle of Blair Mountain. On Blair Mountain, the earthworks and machine gun nests have been uncovered and unearthed. Blair Mountain was briefly listed on the National Register of Historic Places until our governor, Joe Manchin, D. Cole, raised such a ruckus that it has now been delisted, and the coal companies will do everything they can to forever obliterate Blair Mountain. Now, I may make some people mad in saying this, but I won't get all broke up over Blair Mountain. That's where we failed. I don't cotton to memorializing places where you got your ass kicked. Because we did. Working people took up arms and marched on Logan. And they were met with the full weight of the state government of West Virginia, with the state police, with the National Guard, with the mobilized military of the United States government, and even its new-fangled airplanes throwing bombs at the miners from above. And that is where the young movement for rights for working people ground to a halt. It is where we proved that we did not have the starch to remain nonviolent. It is where we proved that the coal companies could lead us around by a ring in our nose, because the only way we knew how to meet violence was with more violence. The only way we knew to meet blood was with blood. The only way we knew to meet killing was with more killing. And so, in 2009, not quite 100 years after the Battle of Blair Mountain, the coal companies are doing it again, whipping their employees into a terrified, murderous frenzy, trying to goad our side into violence. I think we might be a little sharper this time through. I hope we are. Everything we do now is going to be met by some form of intimidation. Everything we do now is going to be met by some form of threat. There will be an element of violence in the response of the coal industry for every word we speak, whether that violence be overtly manifested or whether that violence be emotional violence done to their own working people in claim that, oh, they're trying to take your jobs. Godforsaken out-of-state corporations manipulating my fellow citizens in this state, damn them all to hell. But that's what's coming. And the upside to all of it is that it is tracking right in line with what Gandhi said. First they ignore you. Then they laugh at you. Then they fight you. Then you win. It is abundantly apparent to me that we are now very deeply into stage three. And we did not take it to stage three. The Friends of Coal did. And they're excited about it. Because all they know how to do is engage in violence. They cannot engage in dialogue. They don't want dialogue. They want the absolute suppression of information coming out of Appalachia. They want people to shut up so they can continue to ruin this place and get themselves a tidy little paycheck in exchange for it, never realizing what they are doing to their own children and grandchildren and unborn and undreamt of great and great-great-grandchildren who will spit on the ground at the mere mention of their name. Because of how history will judge all this. So, Saturday night, 8 o'clock. Get there early. Seats are limited. Saturday night, 8 o'clock, West Virginia Cultural Center Theater. It's quite a film. And in the end, it is a heartbreaking film. Because Marilyn Evans has done a superb job of pointing up the brother against brother, father against son, neighbor against neighbor nature of the conflict here. And the war the coal companies are trying to get started. Ultimately, the verdict on that will be the answer to that rather cutesy question from the 1960s. What if they gave a war and nobody came? Well, the coal companies are trying to give a war in southern West Virginia. And it remains to see whether our side can hang on to our principles and refuse to participate. We talked about the great Herman Melville short story some weeks back, Bartleby the Scrivener. And the central phrase arising from that novella is, I prefer not to. And that is the way that I feel about the violence being ginned up by the coal industry. I prefer not to. Nonviolence is hard work. The inspiring thing is that it appears that we are, in fact, up to the task. Cross your fingers and hope that it stays that way. So I just thought you'd like to know about the information crackdown in West Virginia. It is a challenging time to be in this place. Your calls are welcome. We're half past the first hour of the program now. Your calls are welcome at 304-658-3333. That's direct dial on your own nickel. If you need us to pick up the freight, it's 877-443-2366. Toll free, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's all that easy. Great conversations taking place in the chat room right now. Try that sometime if you haven't before. Headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Another track from the new disc out from Aurora Lights Music. Still Moving Mountains, The Journey Home. Cabin Creek Hollow. Right here on America's listener-supported liberal voice. The Horn.
They wanted to buy this property, and there's not so much as one little square inch. They don't have enough money to buy.
Ship them way up north.
Cabin Creek Holla from the album Still Moving Mountains, The Journey Home. You can get your own copy by going to auroralights.org. Aurora, A-U-R-O-R-A, lights, L-I-G-H-T-S, .org. Not a bad track on the disc. And catchy, too, as you can tell. And some Jim Dandy good musicianship. About 28 minutes and change before the hour. Shall we move on? And forgive me if I say that it is difficult to move on. Because these issues are so, well, they're intertwined with our existence here. But we will attempt to go elsewhere. But we're going to make a last little stop in Missouri. Missouri, a state that I do hold dear. For I spent a couple of very pleasant years there early in my life, being a student. You know they have a senator there by the name of Claire McCaskill. And she has from time to time said some rather inspiring things for which we have roundly praised her. Not this time. She showed up on a right-wing radio show in Missouri yesterday, and she announced her intention to try to defeat and water down an already watered-down and ineffective climate change bill that has passed the House. It's not thin enough to suit Claire McCaskill. Never mind my commentary. You hear her for yourself.
This is a conservative station. This is a conservative audience, and I really appreciate the fact that you're going to come on and say, you know what, you represent us all, so let's talk about the issues.
Absolutely, and, you know, one of the things that I am conscious of every single day is that I have an obligation to do my best to do what I think is right for everybody in Missouri, but I got to be responsive to every single person, so I try to take all comers, as they say. I'm not going to make everybody happy, but I do want to be accessible.
Well, with over 15 years of media experience, I can tell you that has not always been the case with everybody, so I appreciate it. But let's go ahead and get right to the big issues here. Obviously, right now, the cap and trade is the big thing. Now, in a state that is, you know, in a lot of ways dependent on coal, you know, there's a lot of worry about this. You know, the current version of the bill working through the Senate, how does that look to you right now? Where are you on the cap and trade?
Well, I'm going to make my friends on the left very unhappy, and I'm going to make those who don't think global warming is real very unhappy, because I'm probably going to be working with a group of moderates in the middle to try to come up with a bill that doesn't punish coal-dependent states like Missouri.
What you mean, Senator McCaskill, is you're going to try to come up with a bill that continues to punish people who live in Appalachia. And all that palaver about how you try to be respondent and you don't just represent some Missourians, you represent all of them, that's a damn lie. What you're doing is you're capitulating to a certain coal company that's headquartered in St. Louis. The name of that coal company is Peabody. Come on, everybody, you know the song. You've heard John Prine sing Paradise, and Mr. Peabody's coal train hauled it away. That Peabody. That's who Claire McCaskill is representing when she says that that she's going to work with some moderates, in the middle. Time to explain to Senator McCaskill that the only thing in the middle of the road are yellow stripes and dead critters. Now, I'm sure that Claire McCaskill has had a good talking to by my senator, John D. Rockefeller IV. I'm sure he's explained to her that as far as he is concerned, it's mountaintop removal yesterday, mountaintop removal today, and mountaintop removal forever as he stands in the schoolhouse door in Appalachia. Blocking change, blocking progress, blocking hope, blocking freedom, blocking rights. Oh, Senator McCaskill, you don't want to get down and lay with no dogs because you're going to get up with fleas, honey. And it ain't fun.
We've got to be very careful with what we do with this legislation. For one, we need to be a leader in the world, but we don't want to be a sucker. And if we go too far with this, all we're going to do is chase more jobs to China and India, where they've been putting up coal-fired plants every 10 minutes. So,
wow, a few days ago it was coal-fired power plants every 10 days. A couple of months before that it was coal-fired power plants every 10 weeks. Claire McCaskill's got it. Jesus, can you imagine? You'd probably be able to see that from space. Coal-fired power plants going up every 10 minutes in China and India. Man, Senator McCaskill, how liquored up were you when Senator Rockefeller told you that?
I'm very conscious of the fact that Missouri businesses and Missouri families don't have a choice as to where they get their utility generation. It's coming primarily from coal now, and it will take a decade or longer to move to either sequestered coal or other forms of energy.
Sequestered coal. Really, Senator? And is that coal going to be carried to the sequestration point by little wagons pulled by purple polka-dotted unicorns? It ain't going to happen, Senator. You are correct, however, in one regard. Missouri is held captive by the coal industry. But why is that? How did that happen? Why has this country not pursued a sane, sustainable energy policy beginning with the first day after Jimmy Carter delivered his landmark address in the late 1970s? Why are Missourians still beholden to coal? Why does big coal still have its ham fist around Missouri families' throats? Well, the answer, Senator McCaskill, is because of people like you who want to be moderate and who want to talk to people in the middle. There is no middle, Senator McCaskill. Yes, we're burning coal today. Yes, we're going to burn coal for energy tomorrow. But if that tomorrow becomes Shakespearean and becomes tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeping each day in its petty pace unto a dusty death, we're all done for, Senator McCaskill. We are all done for, and there ain't going to be nobody left to show you in Missouri.
That will be more responsible as it relates to getting out from underneath the thumb of foreign oil and reducing our carbon imprint. So
you cannot really reduce your carbon imprint if you increase the usage of the dirtiest carbon fuel on the planet and quite possibly in the known universe. This is psychobabble. This is corporate lobby babble. This is palaver that has nothing to do with reality whatsoever. Get busy, Senator McCaskill. Sponsor some legislation that will help Missouri get free of coal's filthy, poisonous, toxic grip. Start working on renewables in your state and in the states that surround you. Start the heavy lifting that surrounds the issue of a new power grid in this country. Before you consign yourself to that segment reserved by history for laughingstocks. and fools. Damned fools and goddamned fools.
I won't vote for the version ever that was voted on last year in the Senate. I would vote against that version. I don't think the version that passed the House will pass the Senate in the same shape. So I'm going to be one of those trying to craft it in a way that is very gradual, that is not going to hurt a state like Missouri that is so-called dependent.
And yet, in your efforts to water that legislation down, even more so than it already is as it has arrived to you in the Senate from the House, complete with $60 billion of welfare for your constituent at Peabody, among others. In doing that, Senator, you are doing precisely what you say you do not want to do. You are hurting Missourians. You are hurting them beyond ways that you are even qualified or desirous to contemplate.
Why is there such an immense pressure and there's an immense, you know, urgency? Why does this, you know, the folks in on your side of the aisle, Bureau of Canada, say we need to do this right now? You know, we've there's so many questions about the cost, which will eventually come back to the consumer. Why is there such an urgency that says we have to do this, not within, you know, sometime in the next year or next year? It has to be done within days or weeks. Where is that coming from?
Well, it's coming from the science. And by the way, just because the legislation is done doesn't mean that all of its provisions go into effect immediately. In fact, they are very, as it stands now, I think the support, if there is going to be enough support for the bill, it will be a very gradual implementation as we move towards changing to wind and solar and other kinds of energy. But, you know, keep in mind, John McCain was one of the co-sponsors of this legislation in its first iteration. I mean, it was the McCain-Lieberman bill. And so we had both the Republican nominee for president and the Democratic nominee for president agreeing that this is a problem that must be dealt with. And I think one of the reasons that some are anxious to do something this year is to set the tone for Copenhagen that occurs later this year, where we are busy trying to use every stick and carrot imaginable to bring other countries into line with making strides in this regard. Like I said before, it's not going to do us any good to clean up our act as it relates to the atmosphere. It's the same atmosphere that China shares and Japan shares and India shares, some very big industrial countries. So we've got to make sure that they're in line with us, and that's why us beginning to take a step before Copenhagen, there is a wide belief that that's going to be a spur to help us secure the kind of agreements we need to get from China and India primarily.
'Twas brillig and the slithy tove, did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy was the borogrove and the mown raths outgrabed. What a case of talking out of both sides of your mouth. Kind of reminds me of the Book of Revelations, doesn't it, you? I would that you were hot or cold, but you are neither hot nor cold, and I will spit thee out of my mouth. She'd been doing so-so, half-decent. But, you know, we had that story the last night or the night before about Harry Reid possibly doing a little bit of low-rent arm-twisting on health care in hopes of and telling Max Baucus that he's got to quit playing footsie with the Republicans like Charles Grassley and get busy crafting something that the Democrats can get passed instead of trying to constantly pacify the dead enders from the Republican Party. The same applies here. This woman, you know, what I'd like to see happen in the Senate is for what came out of the House to get strengthened and to get real about the fact that we have got to stop belching. Look, well, you know, we can't do it because China and India are going to do it.
and we're just going to be sending more jobs to China and India. Well, you know what? That doesn't have to happen. That's another law, Claire. But the fact of the matter is, you have got to stop working with those, you know, moderates and people in the middle. Because the middle, at this point in time, is just slightly to the right of Mussolini in this country. That's where your moderates are. Do you really want to work with a moderate like Joe Lieberman? Can you really look yourself in the eye in the mirror and say, I worked with a moderate today, when the moderate you worked with was Arlen Specter? Can you really? I don't think you can. Lord of mercy. It has been noted that the cap-and-trade system that the House passed fully, and of course it may very well be a Goldman Sachs boondoggle if you have read the article by Matt Taibbi. The cap-and-trade system the House passed fully protects states now dependent on coal with multi-billion dollar programs for advanced coal technology, that will never work. Representative Henry Waxman told WNYC's Brian Lehrer this past Monday that the House anticipated the Senate's concerns by taking into account the so-called regional issues. He said, and I quote, "We tried to keep the Senate in mind and adopted a bill that eliminates some of the regional disparities and bad results. The Senate is particularly sensitive when you have two senators per state to what's going to happen in their state." And that's why we drafted a bill that wasn't really partisan, but more bridging the regional differences and some of the partisan differences by making sure no country and no industry had to bear more of the burden and that the ratepayers, wherever they may be in this country, are protected from steep increases. The steep increases aren't going to come in the first place. That's a wholly owned, canard created by PR flacks in offices at Massey Energy and Peabody and Arch and, you know, Consol. It has nothing to do with ratepayers. It has to do with holy profit and sacred coal. But you know that. Even coal proponents, for instance, like Rick Boucher from Virginia. Rick Boucher said that the ACES Act, quote, doesn't disproportionately. My focus in the shaping of the bill in the Energy and Commerce Committee was to keep electricity rates affordable and to enable utilities to continue using coal. Both of these goals have been achieved. Now, with regard to the $60 billion in carbon capture boondoggle pink polka-dotted unicorn giveaways, You know what my congressman's objection was? He said that it calls for the carbon capture technology to be deployed too quickly, that we're not giving carbon capture technology enough time to become fully successful. The only problem is, if that bill had given carbon capture technology 1 million years to become successful, it never would have, because it is scientific garbage. It is scientifically impossible. It is the search for the universal solvent, the philosopher's stone. It is alchemy. It is the search for a means of turning lead into gold. Or in this case, toxic fly ash carbon filth into gold. Claire McCaskill. Claire, do you want to be part of history, or do you want to be one of history's punchlines? It's really quite that simple. And there's no middle ground. And there's no middle of the road. at all. So, where did that hour go? Well, wherever it went, another one's about to go there, too. This is the end of hour number one. Hope you'll stick around for hours two and three. And I hope you'll participate and join in. Pick up the phone. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the direct dial number. This is, in fact, America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. The Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on its way. Email to bobkincaid@gmail.com if something's on your mind. We'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 9, 2009.
Obama gets his face on Mount Rushmore. Monsanto lobbyist moves to FDA. Bald eagles move to D.C. Plus, today in Arizona right-wing nuttery.
I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report.
In the summertime, when the weather is hot, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind.
Well, I've seen what I can find. I've got women on my mind, and the woman is Desi Doyen. What do you got?
Well, President Obama got his face on Mount Rushmore a little early when activists from Greenpeace scaled the iconic monument and unfurled a giant banner with his photo, calling on Obama to show leadership on global warming while he's at the G8 summit. The banner said, quote, "America honors leaders, not politicians. Stop global warming." The activists were safely escorted down, arrested, and each faces up to 6 months in prison and a $5,000 fine.
It was really cool.
Yes, it was. Right. We have the photo online at greennews.bradblog.com. At that G8 summit in Italy, some progress toward an international climate agreement was made by the leaders of the industrialized world in advance of the big meeting in Copenhagen in December. According to Reuters, the results have been a mixed bag. The developed nations agreed on a goal to limit the rise in global average temperatures to 2 degrees Celsius, which works out to be about 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. That's the first time the U.S. has agreed to any of those goals. But the agreement is non-binding, and environmental groups criticize it for lack of specific emissions targets and no commitments in the short term. Now, emerging economic powerhouses like China and India did not sign on. They're calling on rich countries to commit to deeper cuts in the short term.
Now, this is one of the arguments the Republicans have been making in fighting climate change legislation in the Congress, saying that China and India aren't signing on. Is there anything to their claims that if China and India don't sign on, that the agreements are essentially meaningless?
No, because the point being that China and India are waiting for the U.S. and other industrialized countries to lead the way. They're not going to commit until we commit. Republicans
are they going to commit even if we do commit?
Well, that's the good question. They have indicated that they might, but this is all diplomacy. It's all very delicate. The Obama administration has hired Monsanto's lobbyist to advise the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration.
Oh, brother.
Jill Richardson over at the excellent food blog LaVitaLocavore.org reports that former Monsanto executive and lobbyist Michael Taylor was appointed as a special advisor to the commissioner. Monsanto is the biotechnology giant pushing genetically modified foods all over the world, and the former executive has been working that revolving door between government and industry his career.
What the hell is a Monsanto lobbyist doing in the Obama administration advising on food safety? Are you kidding me?
Well, he's outside the two-year limit that the Obama administration had proposed for all people hoping to work in the administration.
Well, okay, so he's outside the limit, but does he have any, should he be advising on this matter in the Obama administration?
You know, the food blogs basically in the blogosphere are divided on the issue. They say his past is not promising, but perhaps in the future he will prove to be a good watchdog.
Yeah, well, I heard somebody said that he had a change of heart, but yeah, well, okay. Don't get me started.
Let the eagles soar.
Bald eagles, the nation's symbol of freedom, have returned to the nation's capital for the first time since the Truman administration.
Yay, this is great news. Finally, a positive story.
Well, wait, there's more.
What?
According to the L.A. Times, the nesting pair have raised chicks since 2001 on the empty grounds of an abandoned hospital that's now a designated protected habitat that's less than 2 miles from the Capitol building. The National Park Service has jurisdiction over the grounds, but the Department of Homeland Security has decided to build its new mega headquarters somewhere, and they want to build it right next door.
No.
and put a road right through the habitat.
So they're going to run the eagles out?
Yes.
The Department of Homeland Security.
Biologists say that the eagles don't like urbanization, so it'll probably scare them off. Now, the Federal Highway Administration decides the matter this month, so we have the links. You can contact them. Let them know what you think.
All right, we're going to follow this story.
The state legislature in Arizona has been having some difficult weeks as they were wrapping up their unfinished business, including solar energy legislation at the end of their legislative session. For example, if you know you're going to miss your midnight deadline to deliver a budget to the governor, well, if you're in Arizona, you stop time by unplugging the clocks.
They literally unplug the clocks so that they couldn't meet the deadline.
That the deadline never came.
So that the deadline never came.
And if you don't want the governor to call you back into a special session, well, you just lock the doors. So you can't get her order.
And this is a Republican governor and a Republican legislature. She was promising to veto some of their legislation, so they locked the doors so she couldn't deliver her message. Is that right?
That is correct.
This reminds me of the Bush administration. Remember when they would not read the EPA finding? They wouldn't open the email? Unbelievable. Nice job, Arizona.
But that's not all.
What?
State Senator Sylvia Allen had an interesting reason to support yet another uranium mine in Arizona.
This earth's been here 6,000 years. I know I'm going on and on. I'll shut up. It's been here 6,000 years, long before anybody had environmental laws, and somehow it hasn't been done away with.
I just want to point out, she says the earth is 6,000 years old, but she's in favor of the uranium mine. Now, it's because of uranium that we have carbon dating. That's how we know the earth is billions of years old. You can either believe in creationism or you can believe in the properties of uranium. You can't believe in both.
Wing nuts in Arizona. Read about that and so much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Unbelievable. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Betty Doyen.
And this has been your Arizona right-wing wing nut Green News Report.
And all you can do is laugh at her. Doesn't anybody know how to pray? Arizona, take off your rainbow shades. Arizona.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Twelve past seven here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia. Hour two already well underway. Another great job by Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen with the Green News Report. I love that sort of perplexed irony in Brad's voice. You know, they're really working their, Brad and Desi are really working their way toward a sort of environmental Burns and Allen thing going on for them. And that, by the way, is a compliment. So there you have it. Light up the phones if you want to. I can fill a Bobster, or you can light up the phones. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or 304-658-3333, email to bobkincaid@gmail.com. Let's see who we've got here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Well, I got a couple things for you.
Okie doke.
When I was a kid, I ran into, to my great shock, after the first part of my youth being spent in the Pacific Northwest, which was voluntarily integrated, and I didn't have any problem with it. Nobody did. Then we moved to Virginia, and I ran into the segregated South.
Yeah, that can be a little shock to the system.
Oh, yeah, culture shock big time. So imagine the flashback I got when I was surfing the net yesterday and I see the headline, private pool kicks out minority kids who might, quote, change the complexion.
Yeah, calling Dr. Freud, I saw that. How out there, how clueless, how, or, you know, maybe you're just that much of a racist. A quick little addendum, Susan. Let's note that this is taking place outside of Philly. This is not taking place in Birmingham, Memphis, Atlanta, Jackson.
Yeah, this is in the north.
Yeah.
This is above the Mason-Dixon line group. This isn't in the deep south where one would expect it to be. This is in where would one expect it to be in the liberal north. Guess what? I couldn't.
And then they tried to explain away the complexion and atmosphere quote by saying, well, there are a lot of children in the pool and not enough lifeguards as general members. We were not told that they were coming. If we knew, we could decide not to not come when the pool was crowded or come anyway. We could have had an option.
Never mind the fact that the camp paid in advance.
Yeah.
To the tune of $1,500, so they had to know they were coming. that just blows me away.
Do you know where some private swim clubs came from? You referenced moving to Virginia during those dark times, and dangerous. Well, let's see. I believe it was Strom Thurmond advocated closing all public pools in South Carolina if they were forcibly integrated. Just as white flight took place from soon-to-be integrated schools and all these little Christian academies popped up like ragweed all over the South, so too did other private institutions that could thereby limit membership and limit attendance.
And by the way, people in the North, before you get feeling too thrilled by your record of integration, white flight was a Northern invention.
Really? How so?
The white flight from the suburbs.
Sure. And the busing riots and the busing controversies, Denver, Boston, so forth. Sure.
Because let's face it, in the deep south, they were more honest about it. They just said, "Hey, boy, you ain't allowed to go past this street." Pardon my use of that term.
I understand.
And yeah, you know, they were very honest about their racism. In the North, it was very hypocritical, but nonetheless fair. And that's why I agree with Mike Malloy. If you're white, you're a racist. I don't care.
You have some element of it flowing through you somewhere. At some point in time, you have locked a door. You have looked the other way. You have felt the little hairs rise on the back of your neck out of nothing but the recognition of a different shade of skin complexion.
Exactly. Now, we go from the oppression of one people, or actually two peoples, be they African American or Appalachian, to another, which frankly has kind of dropped out of the news.
Which?
They ain't done yet, guys.
Iran?
The people of Iran have cranked it up again.
Yeah, and this time the response is downright mean. We got tear gas and bombs smoke over Tehran.
Yeah, they're dying. They're dying hard. But they're going out anyway, and they're still dying, and they're still going out. They're not quitting. Would the Democrats have that much guts and backbone? Don't you think?
Yeah, Harry Reid could take a lesson.
Yeah, I stand in awe of these people. These people ain't going to take no for an answer.
And frankly, there's no indication that there's an end game in place.
Yeah, these are truly free people because the only thing you can do is kill them.
Yeah, it's kind of like around here. Well, you know, they can kill us, but they can't eat us. We got laws against eating human beings in West Virginia.
And it's just amazing. These people awe me. I admire them immensely. Now, I may not admire their politics because I think eventually the type of society they end up with it will be probably just as radical and just as hateful towards us as anybody else. But it will be one that they will have decided upon and died for and bled for. Good for them. More power to them.
Celebrate them. Yeah, you have to admire them. You have to admire the determination.
Yes.
And frankly, you hope that it won't be, you know, you hope that it won't be inimical. We have to remember, Susan, that the enmity between Iran and the United States was birthed not in Iran, but in the United States.
Exactly. That's why I'm hoping that we can keep the face of this rebellion to the forefront, because as long as it's the face of NATO, you can't hate these people. You can't distance them to the point where you can drop a nuke on them. Or at least I can't.
No. And yet, like that list of right-wing joking headlines from 2017 that I read the other night that I don't think anybody heard. One of the right-wing headlines for 2017 is, scientists announce it will be another 10 years before it is safe to enter Iran as radiation levels have not yet sufficiently decreased. Ho, ho, ho! Yeah, who nuked them? Oh, by the way, email coming in from our pal Cindy, who is sort of in your same neck of the woods. She wants to know if you're close enough to the river to see if there's a fire north of Kalama.
Kalama?
Okay, Kalama. I knew I'd screw it up. I had two choices. I chose the wrong one.
Sorry, it's an Indian name. I probably...
Well, they all are, but I mean, you know, that don't help with the pronunciation. But...
I probably could see it if I went out in my front yard, yeah.
Okay. Well,
if it's big enough.
Well, I don't know if there is a fire there or there's not a fire. She said, ask her if she's close enough to the river to see if there is a fire north of Kalama.
Yeah, well, I'm close enough to the river to see the boats going up and down the river without leaving my, I can see it from my front window.
Okay, well, you'll have to report back then. Shoot me an email so we can respond.
I'll do that little thing.
Okay. And you know, I'll try not to. Third time's a charm. Kalama.
Kalama.
Yeah.
Hey, at least you haven't tried to pronounce the Skookumchuck River.
Oh, I can handle Skookumchuck. But it's probably spelled with a bunch of Z's and K's and L's and M's and everything that don't sound like what it is. You know, it's like that river over there near Philadelphia. I try to avoid that like the plague. But then again, you know, we get great joy here where I live out of watching not from around here types try to pronounce Kanawha.
Kanaw.
Yeah. We've been through that, yes. The Kanaw.
Once you get into Indian names, it's not all that hard.
Although I suspect it was the Kanawha, but you know.
Nah.
And as has been said in the past, it probably means River of Death. Tennessee, River of Death, Mississippi, River of Death. You know, the rivers were important, for but they were also very dangerous.
Well, the Mississippi is the Great Father River.
Well, that was just the, yeah, that was its term of endearment.
But, yeah, the thing with the Iranians, though, is they are this century's, as far as I'm concerned, they're the equivalent of us for this century.
Yeah.
Think about it.
I know.
Cool. Watch it in wonderment, people. It doesn't happen often.
Well, say hi to Donald for us, Susan. We will talk soon.
Okay, and I will be putting, as soon as I get them, people, I will be putting links in our show posts for Bob to where you can buy these videos that he's talking about.
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, of course, Mary Lynn Evans's film is not available on video yet. It'll be screened on PBS, so I'm not sure what kind of limitations are on that, but it'll be out on DVD sooner or later.
Yeah, but I'm talking about all the other videos.
Oh, sure. Burning the Future, Kilowatt Hours.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Susan. Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.
From Columbia City, Oregon, where she can see the river itself, and whether or not there is a fire burning north of a place that I dare not pronounce because I've screwed it up twice already, that's News Ninja Susan. Okay, a couple other things. Susan takes care of my blog posts, by the way, and she was asking me what was on my mind earlier today. And frankly, the issue with the theater and the film was on my mind. Check your PBS listings for when this is going to air. You will want to see it. It's a tremendously powerful film. And frankly, it's a pretty balanced look. But the other thing that had caught my eye between the end of the program last night and Showtime today, an article in the newspaper Haaretz. Haaretz, is that a correct pronunciation? I will get information on that. I want an update. Remind me, an update later. Some more observations about grape juice and wine and that odd little discussion that we had last night. Speaking of the Middle East. Anyway, this from the Israeli newspaper Haaretz. Haaretz.com, HAARETZ.com. And the query I asked in my blog post, and I ask it again generally, is Netanyahu Hebrew for Nixon? Because this ugly old right-wing bloodthirsty monster in Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, is certainly beginning to travel some Nixon turf. You remember the great parody that Dan Aykroyd did of Nixon with him completely submerged in the depths of just brain-jarring paranoia, talking to the portraits on the wall at the White House? Well, Abe, they simply don't understand me. You remember that? It was great. It would appear that Benjamin Netanyahu has gotten there. And you know, this is what happens. This is what happens to autocratic, authoritarian people in power. Eventually, they go nuts because they realize they get to the point where they feel like they can't trust anyone around them. Happened with Nixon. Happened with Hitler. Happened with Stalin. Happened with Caesar. Happened with Alexander. Okay? Yeah, really. Yesterday was the new Israeli government's 100th day, or day before yesterday, was the new Israeli government's 100th day in office. And there was a press conference held by the Prime Minister's Bureau at the Knesset. Um,
and it was, I don't know, maybe there's something going around the world that's contagious among right-wing autocratic authoritarians. Because, you know, there was Godzilla from Wasilla with her bizarre, rambling, disjointed, just weird, disconnected little press conference last Friday. And now that trend has hit Israel, where in this press conference, and this makes my eyes cross and roll back in my head and just at his press conference, and now bear in mind, just the background, Rahm Emanuel is Barack Obama's chief of staff. Rahm Emanuel is Jewish. Rahm Emanuel isn't just Jewish, and he's not just an American citizen. Rahm Emanuel, as far as I understand, holds dual citizenship with Israel and the United States. In other words, he is a man of divided loyalties. He owes allegiance to Israel, and he owes it to the United States. And he has been quite vociferous in his support of Israel. If you recall, when he was named chief of staff going in, someone said something to Rahm Emanuel's father, and he replied, "Well, he's going to have power. Of course Israel will be well represented. It's not like he's going to be some Arab scrubbing the floors." Remember that? I remember that. This paragraph from the Haaretz article. Netanyahu appears to be suffering from confusion and paranoia. Jesus, anybody seen Henry Kissinger lately? He is convinced that the media are after him. Oh, wait a minute. Sarah, the former Governor Palin, meet soon-to-be former Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's the I don't know, what's the accent over there when you say liberal media? Netanyahu appears to be suffering from confusion and paranoia. He is convinced that the media are after him, that his aides are leaking information. Well, Henry, we've got to find out where the rat is. Where's the leaker in the administration, Henry? And that the American administration wants him out of office. 2 months after his visit to Washington, Netanyahu is still finding it difficult to communicate normally with the White House. Well, you know, when you're babbling incoherently on one side, which, you know, the bloodlust that Netanyahu manifests on a daily basis is pretty much, that's what it is, normal communication is going to be difficult. The article continues, to appreciate the depth of his paranoia, it is enough to hear how he refers to sit down, you know, like Bill Hicks, sit down and strap in, because otherwise the top of your head's going to be real sore when it hits the ceiling. Okay, I suggest a tennis ball in the mouth and a little bit of duct tape. This won't take long, but it will at least muffle the screaming. To appreciate, are we ready? Everybody? Okay. To appreciate the depth of his paranoia, it is enough to hear how he refers to Rahm Emanuel and David Axelrod, Obama's senior aides, as, and this has quotation marks around it, self-hating Jews. Sometimes I hate the way the show rolls back on itself and rolls over on me. It was a couple of nights ago, I guess, we were talking with Sandra, you and I. And I jokingly asked her if, in criticizing Obama, anybody had called her yet a self-hating black woman.
Because that you know, it's such a typical response. Well, you know, you don't hold the same position as me. You must be a self-hating. And of course, the mother of that phrase is the slur as used by shameless backers of Israel, always Israel, Israel always right, Israel now, Israel tomorrow, Israel forever, Israel right or wrong, you know, love it or leave it. That group coined the phrase self-hating Jew. This article, by the way, is by Barak Ravid, who is a correspondent for Haaretz. Yeah. Rahm Emanuel, who would let the entire world catch fire if he thought there was benefit to Israel in it, whose father fought in the IDF, Rahm Emanuel, in the paranoid ramblings of Benjamin Netanyahu, is now a self-hating Jew. So is David Axelrod. Well, at least they haven't gotten around to quoting him referring to Barack Obama as that Schwarze. Barak Ravid closes his article saying, at a recent meeting with Netanyahu, ostensibly about the understandings with the U.S. on the settlements, former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert was shocked to see the Prime Minister focusing mainly on the media. A source close to Olmert quoted Olmert as saying, "Is this what he called me in for?" Behind closed doors, Netanyahu's coalition partners, including Defense Minister Ehud Barak and Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman, have also expressed shock at his behavior. One senior minister told an aide that he is finding it very difficult to work with the premier. The minister said, quote, "He drives us mad. Every minute things change, and I'm constantly busy doing maintenance on Netanyahu." You know, having a crazy guy in charge of more than 200 nuclear weapons is not the most comforting thing, especially when that crazy man in charge of 200 nuclear weapons happens to be a right-wing extremist, authoritarian, autocratic zealot. Mr. Netanyahu, meet Mr. Ahmadinejad. You hate each other. Sit down. Talk for a little bit. You're going to find that you have more crazy things in common than you have separating you. I have a feeling there will be a treaty when you guys exit the room. And it will be a treaty of madness. Really? Rahm Emanuel is a self-hating Jew? Somebody call Woody Allen. He's expounded on that topic a few times, very humorously. That just gobsmacks me. The right wing in Israel has gone so far around the bend that anything short of telling them that they can literally publicly flay the skin off Palestinians from the occupied territories, anything short of that is anti-Semitic, anti-Zionist, and constitutes being a self-hating Jew, Christian. Well, no, see, self-hating Jew is the shorthand that they use for Jews that they would prefer to call anti-Semitic, but really realize they sound really stupid calling another Jew anti-Semitic. So they had to come up with self-hating Jew to fill in that sort of pejorative gap. Sleep tight tonight, Israel. You've got a nutbag in charge. If you happen to wake up and everything's bright outside, don't assume it's morning. you might just as easily assume that Netanyahu has gone around the bend and decided to light up the big one. And all in the world that Barack Obama said was, you know, it would be nice if you didn't expand the settlements in occupied Palestine. And then, of course, there was the statement the other day that the Obama administration has most assuredly not given the green light to Israel to start dropping them on, you know, street vendors in Tehran at will, you know, turning Tehran into a free fire zone. You know, they actually do, in many instances, they do democracy pretty well in Israel. And I hope that they will do a no confidence on this clown and get him the hell out of power before he does light up the Middle East. Because there are store, well, for instance, do you know about this organization called TIP? That's an acronym for the Israel Project. They're another lobby advocacy group in, of course, D.C. They say their mission is to, quote, devoted to educating the press and the public about Israel while promoting security, freedom, and peace. Well, that sounds lovely. Let's all have cake. Not really. I don't think you can be that dedicated to that proposition when you're when one of the things that you spend your time, effort, and money on is developing a 2009 global language dictionary, which is euphemistically a euphemism for this is a quote, a manual on how to talk to journalists and opinion molders about the Arab-Israeli conflict. If you have to learn how to talk to somebody about an issue, that generally means that you don't have the law, the facts, morality, ethics, whatever, on your side. It means that you're going to have to lie creatively. Well, check out this excerpt from the 2009 TIP Global Language Dictionary, a manual on how to talk to journalists and opinion molders about the Arab-Israeli conflict. Quote, the single toughest issue, according to TIP, is the settlements in the occupied territories that have displaced thousands, if not millions, of Palestinian natives. That's the single toughest issue, according to TIP. And they have identified in the United States what they call hostility towards them being so-called settlements, and towards Israeli policy that appears to encourage settlement activity. This is one of those Orwell moments. George, you around anywhere? George Orwell, please. Call for George Orwell. Yeah, TIP says that the best argument for the settlements is as follows. I didn't tell you to loosen the straps. You just stay strapped right in there. You can take the ball, the tennis ball in a minute, because we'll be past this. According to TIP, the best argument for settlements in the occupied West Bank is as follows. Arab citizens of Israel enjoy equal rights. Therefore, telling Israelis that they can't live in the Palestinian occupied territories, quote, is a racist idea. What did I tell you? Pretty soon, you know, pretty soon it'll be the guy's so paranoid Benjamin Netanyahu that serving him a cold cup of coffee will constitute an overt hostile act against the state of Israel. Now, bear in mind, if there ever is a two-state solution, Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad has recently stated that any Jews or Israelis who choose to live in the new Palestine, quote, will not enjoy any less rights than Israeli Arabs enjoy now in the state of Israel. They are arguing, get this, that Tip argues that not expanding the settlements in the occupied West Bank constitutes ethnic cleansing. All right, I give up. Take the straps off. Take the tennis ball out. You've got to just give it. Yeah, really. Yeah. Not further dispossessing people from their own land is ethnic cleansing of the people who are doing the dispossessing. Mother McCree. Paranoid much? I wish I was kidding. I'm not. So, you see, there is more than a little bit to be concerned about. And the funny thing is that Barack Obama has been nothing if not obsequious to Israel thus far. It just turns out that he's not being obsequious enough. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
Talking about Netanyahu, when he was prime minister before, earlier.
Yes.
At another time. I heard him on C-SPAN, and his hero is Newt Gingrich.
Oh, good old Newt.
I mean, I've heard him since then, too, but that was really a shockeroo. That's when Clinton was still president, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the kind of people that killed, assassinated that one prime minister.
Rabin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he was getting toward...
right-wingers, be they Israeli, American, Iranian, whatever, right-wingers are right-wingers are right-wingers, and they are all bloodthirsty murderers.
You got that right.
Sooner or later, right-wingism, authoritarianism, autocracy, leads to the belief that one must further the goals, aims, whatever, of one's philosophy by shedding blood. And it is uniform across the spectrum of right-wing movements.
Well, when somebody's got that kind of mindset, there's no changing them. Maybe it's something that in later years happens, like did to that, the one that, Karl Rove is his successor, the one that died on his deathbed, and he was...
Oh, yeah, yeah, Lee Atwater.
He didn't want to face his maker.
Right.
With what it had on his mind. And McCarthy, Senator Joe McCarthy.
Yeah.
He went bananas toward the end. I always have a feeling that might happen to some of the others, too. I won't name names. But I'm going to tell you, these Blue Dog Democrats, they're really coming up big in the Senate against the health care deal.
Yes, they are. They are hell-bent on making sure that America's health care system does not get fixed. which is just depressing as hell. And you know, but there's, you know, there's some progress being made.
Yeah.
You know, Blue America initiated a series of ads that resulted in what sounded like a change in policy position by Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas.
Oh, good. And boy, that congressman from Missouri.
Oh, Senator McCaskill?
Yeah. My gosh.
Well, you know, she's done good things and she's done not so good things, and this one goes in the not so good category.
Well, she's just like, she's a spokesman for what a lot of Republicans have said.
Well, and frankly, you know, if you've got the headquarters of Peabody Energy in your state, Republican or Democrat is not very salient to the conversation, Juanita, because the Republican or Democrat, odds are that if you're a blue dog or a Republican, you are going to expressly do the bidding of the likes of a Peabody and claim that you're trying and claim that, that in so doing you are representing all of fill in name of state here.
Well, I haven't been watching much of it like I was for a while, but the Senate committee is still going strong with the Republicans. The one that the senator from Delaware.
Biden?
Not Delaware, Connecticut.
Lieberman?
No, Dodd.
Oh, Dodd. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's head of it in place of Kennedy. And you know what I loved about Kennedy was like, I remember when they used to talk to Rumsfeld when he would give his report
mm-hmm.
on the war. And Kennedy would say to him, "Don't you think it's time you resigned?" Bless his heart. And then they'd say, he'd say, Rumsfeld said, "I'm not getting out until the president wants me out."
And we found out when that was.
Yeah. But he would, so I don't know whether, I think Dodd looks like he wishes he was somewhere else sometimes. See, they've got the one doctor who's a Republican that's on that committee. And he's bringing all this stuff up. And, of course, he's bringing it from the Republican point of view. I mean, yes, he's a doctor, but there are other doctors up there that don't necessarily agree with him. You know, a lot of doctors are not. There are a lot of doctors who are for a good health care plan. It would help them out because things have just gotten so crazy where they can get in trouble for the least little thing. But that made me think about Ron Emanuel. That's his name, right?
Yes.
Emanuel?
Yeah, Ron Emanuel.
You know, he hates Governor Dean.
Oh, yes. Despises him.
Yeah, and I just wonder if a lot of people that we could use on the... you know, in the cabinet and so forth, you know, we could really use Dean, and bless his heart, he's fighting for it anyway.
He is, and not giving up. And
no,
And somebody, and that has to be done because this, no matter what, if they pass anything, Juanita, it will be far from what is needed. And we have to continue to have the real answer alive and kicking out there so that when this latest attempt to mollify the people who profit by the misery, agony, anguish, illness, and death of their fellow Americans, when that fails again, we have got to be there and have the thinking in place to say, okay, now let's do it right.
Yeah. But he does his job. He would have been great at health, wealth, or whatever they call it now, at least.
Health and Human Services or Health and Human Resources. Yeah. Well, like I said, I wish
Surgeon General.
I wish Leahy would retire from the Senate and Howard Dean could run to replace him. Vermont having a team like Bernie Sanders and Howard Dean would be force to be reckoned
be
with. Without
wouldn't
a doubt.
That would be great. Yeah. But I just love that man, that Bernie Sanders.
And you know, where healthcare is concerned, AARP needs to get on the wagon too.
Yeah, they've been kind of silent, haven't they?
Well, they've got a right to be, because AARP has largely been reduced to little more than an insurance sales clearinghouse for the insurance industry itself.
Yeah, and honestly, I think as much money as they've made, they could have brought something on their set that would have helped people out years ago. You know, they've made billions of dollars.
Well, they have it there.
They could do something on their own.
And there's let's not get lost in this. I don't want to just shut them down overnight. If there are people out there who want to pay for expensive coverage that gives you crappy care, you know, the old law of the marketplace does apply. Caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. If you go and you buy for-profit insurance, you're going to get for-profit coverage.
Of course. Well, I want to ask you a question. What does it mean now? Is it good or not that some of the hospital associations are going to contribute some money for the healthcare system?
What will be
the result of that? What does that mean?
Consider out there that there are also programs in place by the big pharmaceutical companies, Juanita.
Yeah.
And they donate medicines for people who don't have pharmaceutical coverage, and they say that's an appropriate response, and it's all the response we need for all Americans having access to the pharmaceuticals that they need. Well, this is along the same lines. It's like the story I read the other day about, we don't have to create a public option. We can create a nonprofit plan. Well, you know what? We got a nonprofit hospital over here in Beckley, West Virginia, that treats its nurses like dirt. For whom a contract means nothing.
And, you know, it doesn't mean that they don't make money either, because ours used to be a non-profit. And I guarantee you that the people who sat on the board, they made their money.
Oh, yes, they do. Not-for-profit does not mean not for making money.
Right. Or the big shots.
Right.
But now we've got a for-profit one. We've had one for quite a while. But I noticed this one place. I was wondering if it had anything to do with Bill Frist, because it's a huge organization. This one hospital was from, hospital man was from. But I just wonder if that's just their way to keep it from being any kind of a public.
Sure it is.
Option.
Sure it is. They're trying to cover their butts. That's the same thing as when corporate America says, No, we don't need any regulations. We'll be fine. We'll police ourselves. See, we can do that. Trust us.
Oh, I've been hearing a lot of stuff that the credit card companies are doing now to get around that little dinky things that they were supposed to, what was that law that they enacted? They're supposed to put them under control better.
Oh, which?
Credit card companies.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And hearing about that, too, that they're the one thing that they're not supposed to, I forget what it is, they're not supposed to do something if you have a regular rate, if you don't have like a fluctuating rate.
Mm-hmm.
So they're turning around and making them all.
Right. Oh, look, we found the loophole. Yeah. Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Life is good again.
This is all this money that they've gotten, you know, and they're not doing a blessed thing for people, just for their own self. Oh, boy, I'll tell you something else.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
And by the way, yeah, Cossack in the chat room is reminding me that Rick Scott, the guy who's in charge of all the anti-healthcare reform ads, he bought Healthcare Corporation of America from the Frist family.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it you know, and it went from evil to eviler.
Yeah. Hard to believe, ain't it?
Well, like you said, sadly, no, it's not. I mean, it's just.
It's like you said. We thought Bush was bad, but there are worse.
Oh, and they're out there, and they're just waiting to prove it to us. Yeah,
we got one from, what is it, Mozilla?
Oh, yeah, Godzilla from Wasilla.
Can you imagine? You can't rule it out, Bob, I'll tell you.
You know, where those psychos are concerned, I rule nothing out.
Right. But I'd like to see some different kind of Democrats get in to take the place of those others.
I'm totally,
I didn't know that much about Baucus, but I'm really fed up with that man.
Oh, he's pretty sickening.
You know, that was so dirty what he did. Those people were arrested. They were doctors and people, nurses and all, people that worked in health care, and they didn't want to hear from them.
Well, you know, what did they have to offer?
Yeah. But I didn't know that much. Like I said, I didn't know that much about him, but, you know, found out, I guess. And I'll tell you, I found out about Ball, you know, like about 8 years ago, I think, and or longer, I forget how, but when they were talking about maybe Obama would ask him to be vice president. I thought, oh, God, please, no. Not him. He's a trip.
Well, I can't get my head around what's going on in the Senate.
I know it.
It's so foreign to me that you would have that kind of responsibility and that kind of power, and that you would be in the majority and then refuse to do what it's clear that a majority of America wants you to do.
Right.
And that you would do it for no other reason than protecting your own hide. That just blows my mind.
Me too. And, you know, I saw where they're thinking about destroying those photos or whatever they have of the torture ones that they didn't release.
Really?
Huh?
What? Say again, please.
They're talking about destroying those photos.
They're gone. Dear God.
I hope somebody's around those things and they don't, they sneak them out or something.
What a repulsive idea that is.
I know it. And the Democrats seem to realize that if they get out, they're going to be treated worse than they were when we had that guy from Texas there, Tom DeLay.
Oh, yeah, because they'll find somebody eviler again. Yeah, that word again. Exactly. Hey, Juanita, I got to roll along, dear. We will talk to you again soon, all right?
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now. Have a good night. Calling from Central Florida, View correspondent. That's Juanita. And we didn't get a View update. Juanita, you haven't been slacking on the job, have you, Juanita? You haven't missed it. We haven't had a View update in a while. And supposedly it was it's been kind of zany there. Not that I watch it or anything. I just hear things. Yeah, I hear things. You know, right before the show, John Fox passed a story along to me, and this is sort of lighthearted and fun, and it's always good to see the good guys kind of win one. I've had to fly I don't fly very much at all. It makes my arms so tired. But I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Don't forget to tip your waiter. But when I don't fly very often, and one of the reasons I don't fly very often is because it is such a miserable, loathsome experience. You know, getting your toenails inspected at security, you know, turn your laptop on, turn your laptop off. Is that a cell phone? Put it in it. Got it. Agnes, no fly at all. Agnes is her own personal no-fly zone. But when you do, you generally have a miserable experience. The planes are crappy, they're cramped, they're crowded, and you know, you fly with your chin resting on your knees because the previous owner of the aircraft was Hobbiton Airlines. And then if you do get where you're going, you find out that they've screwed up some other part of your trip. Well, all of this sort of happened to a guy by the name of, Dave Carroll. Dave Carroll. And you know how I feel about art. I love art. And I love it when art fights back. When art is used for good to take the evil down a peg or two. And Dave Carroll did that. He is part of a band called Sons of Maxwell. And back in 2008, the Sons of Maxwell were traveling to Nebraska. This is featured over at Kirks and Liars. Traveling to Nebraska for a one-week tour. And apparently one of Dave Carroll's favorite guitars is a Taylor. And there's a good reason for that, because Taylors are fine acoustic guitars. I mean, fine. There's a music store over in Summersville that Ferg likes to go into and drool and stuff. And while he's looking at drums and so forth, I go back and look at this 12-string Taylor acoustic that just, you know, nice. Four-digit price tag. $4,000 or $5,000. You know. Nice. Well, it turns out that Dave Carroll was traveling when he looked out the window at a stopover and saw his guitars being thrown around the tarmac. And, you know, you're there, you're behind the window of the aircraft, you can't get off the aircraft, all you can do is stare in hopeless, helpless, impotent rage. So he gets to where he's going, and he finds out that, yes, indeed, his Taylor acoustic guitar has been maligned, has been manhandled, has been mangled, has been destroyed. And he goes all the way through the United Chain of Command with each person, each rung up the ladder, telling, "I'm sorry, sir, I just can't help you." Until he finally gets the ultimate no and tells him, "You know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to write 3 songs and I'm going to put them all over the Internet. I'm going to embarrass the life out of you." And he did, and he has. And this is a beautiful little song by Dave Carroll and the Sons of Maxwell, "United Breaks Guitars." God, I love it. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back.
United Airlines on my way to Nebraska. The plane departed Halifax, connecting in Chicago's old fare. While on the ground, a passenger said from the seat behind me, "My God, they're throwing guitars out there." The band and I exchanged a look, best described as terror. At the action on the tarmac, and knowing whose projectiles these would be. So before I left Chicago, I alerted 3 employees who showed complete indifference towards me. United, you broke my Taylor guitar. United, alone with someone else, we're gone by car. 'Cause United breaks guitars. When we landed in Nebraska, I confirmed what I suspected. Mike Taylor had been the victim of a vicious act of malice at old hair. So began a year-long saga. But pass the buck, don't ask me. And I'm sorry, sir, your claim can go nowhere. So do all the airlines people, from New York to New Delhi, including kind Miss Earlwig, who says the final word for them is no. I've heard all your excuses, and I've chased your wild gooses, and this attitude of yours I say must go. United breaks guitars. Well, I wasn't and I'll never fly with you again, 'cause maybe to save the world I probably could, but that won't likely happen. And if it did, I wouldn't bring my luggage, 'cause you'd just go and break it into a thousand pieces, just like you broke my heart. When you
fun parts about doing this is, as I've mentioned before, one of the fun parts about doing this is being ahead of the game, of seeing stuff and identifying stuff and talking about stuff because you provide it to me, or because the news ninjas get up and read the entire internet every day and make sure that I know about things before people in the for-profit media have even begun to think about thinking about them. What was it? 2 weeks ago, maybe? We were talking, maybe it was just last week. It all runs together for me, but it was before this came out. We were talking about the report that identified the most obese states in the union. You know, Mississippi, West Virginia, Tennessee, etc., etc., south. Right. Well, never. Sometimes my little ego, and I know better, but my little ego likes to think that somebody out there is listening and quietly bogarting the show. From Time Magazine, an article under the banner "If You Must Know" by Claire Suddeth. Probably screwing up that name too. Suddeth, whatever. Headline, why are Southerners so fat? And it opens, and, you know, I don't know if Claire Sudath and the folks at Time understand who they're fooling with. They may be fat, but they ain't immobile. Claire, they're going to come for you, baby. And little stick woman, they're going to break you like a pretzel. Because she opens her article as follows. What is it? Is this tonight's Problems with Claire Nights, Claire McCaskill, Claire Sudduth? I don't know. The theme of the program develops as the program develops. So, no, she opens her article with this. I guess this is called strong writing in the for-profit journalism world. People from Mississippi are fat. Oh, they're going to love you in Jackson, honey. With an adult obesity rate of 33%, Mississippi has gobbled its way to the chubbiest state crown for the fifth year in a row. You know, some of them little pageant darlings ain't just going to take that real well, honey. And this is, again, this is part of my little point here. I want to give Claire Sudduth credit for getting it right. Because if you were listening a week or so ago, or whenever the heck it was we talked about this, you know that I said, and it would be so cool to be able to just call it up and play that little clip and have done with it. You know, someday, when we've got a full staff, maybe we will. But I said, you know, I don't think the Southern obesity rate is attributable to biscuits and gravy or cornbread or, grits with or without cheese, ice cream with or without Crystal hot sauce. I don't think you can. No, it's attributable to crappy food. I think that night we learned that we learned the new appellation for Clown Town. As handed us by David in Tennessee of MacDamn Donald's. Clown Town, that's pretty good, too. But we came to the consensus that Southern eating problems stem from the fact that Southern culture is being erased. And it is being replaced with corporate America and crappy corporate food. Claire Sudduth points out, as we did well in advance of her, in fact, 8 of the 10 fattest states are in the South. The region famous for its biscuits, barbecue, and pecan pies. I think I mentioned biscuits, barbecue, and pecan pies, too. Man, I tell you, is my thumb that firmly on the pulse of the zeitgeist? I don't know. The region famous for its biscuits, barbecue, and pecan pies has been struggling with its weight for years. But then again, so has the rest of the country. Wisconsin loves cheese. New Yorkers scarf pizza. Really? I thought they all ate hot dogs from Coney Island or something. God. Stereotypes. And New Englanders have been known to enjoy a crab cake or two. And a New England boiled dinner. Under tooled leather. So why is the South, she asks, so portly? And she gets it right, right off the bat. For one thing, it's poor. Mississippi is not only the fattest state in the nation, but also the poorest, with 21% of its residents living below the poverty line. Alabama and West Virginia, second and third fattest states, are tied for fifth poorest. With a poverty rate of 14%, the South is easily the most impoverished region in the country. When you're poor, you tend to eat more calorie-dense foods because they're cheaper than fruits and vegetables. That's Jeff Levy, executive director of the Trust for America. And then she also picks up on this, which was also picked up by you guys contributing to the discussion. Poor neighborhoods also have fewer grocery stores, even in the rural South. A 2004 study by the University of South Carolina found that most food shopping options in rural areas fall into the convenience store category because grocery stores are located too far away. And then it goes into the stereotypes of Southerners enjoy fried chicken. Not, and then, acutely, not to mention fried steak, fried onions, fried green tomatoes, fried pickles, and fried cornbread. Yeah, but you got to blame the damn Scots for the fried Mars bars. And the fried Snickers and the fried Three Musketeers. We have not stooped that far yet. But David Bassett, co-director of the University of Tennessee's Obesity Research Center, says, I've not come across anything that says the diet in the Southeast is worse than the rest of the country. He blames it on sedentariness and lack of physical activity in the South, and the article goes on to point out that the South has very little in the way of rapid transit, and this is true, very little in the way of rapid transit. And one commenter says, well, you know, look, you may not think of taking the train as exercise, but at least you got to get a walk a couple of blocks to get to the station. That's what I love when I do visit larger areas is, you know, being in what's referred to as a walking city. It's just cool. It just is. But lo and behold, and it references the fact that there are narrower shoulders on the highways, so people are less likely to cycle or walk in the South because the South doesn't have as much snow that those shoulders are designed for in the North. That the North has sidewalks that the South doesn't have, and that's true too. But the reference to mass transit kind of caught my eye in that article because of this. Headline from the Washington Independent. Public transit loses to polluters in climate bill subsidies. Public transit loses to polluters in climate bill subsidies. The Washington Independent writing. As Senate lawmakers launch new efforts to curb the nation's greenhouse gas emissions, some key members have joined local transportation officials and environmentalists to ask a seemingly relevant question. Where's the commitment to public transit? Yeah, really. House lawmakers last month passed a proposal designed to tackle climate change by creating a cap-and-trade system to limit greenhouse emissions and generate revenues for green initiatives. Yet, while billions of dollars went to subsidize the transition of the major polluting industries into the new system, only 1% was dedicated to public transportation projects. Now, let's see. What's going to get America working again? Some damn stupid boondoggle carbon capture storage research gizmo at the University of Polytechnic, who's this not, or a real live mass transit system being built from the ground up in, say, Nashville or Birmingham or Memphis or Mobile. Or Savannah. A light rail, rapid rail transit system for Charlotte. Which one's going to put people to work? Which one's going to have long-term public construction projects associated with it? Ding, 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 ding. Not carbon capture and storage. As Senate Democrats are preparing to unveil their own sweeping climate change proposal, a growing chorus of voices is calling for an increase in public transit funding to eliminate the need for so much additional driving. Transportation accounts for nearly one-third of our emissions, and yet it does not appear to be on Congress's radar screen as one-third of the solution. That from Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, chairman of the Senate Banking Committee's subpanel on transportation. The Obama administration is urging Congress to abandon thoughts of a new transportation bill this year, which would offer another avenue for new public transit funding. Instead, the administration is pushing for an 18-month extension of the current funding blueprint. And, you know, this is all part and parcel of what I've complained about, and you've complained about, and we've complained about, this dedication to half-assed measures. Measures that have name and form, but not substance. Oh, by the way, if you want to nail down exactly and check, you know, check me, check you, check the Horn family against the stuff that was posited in this Time article. You can find the Time article at CNN.com.
David in South Carolina, who got the ball rolling with this, by sending the article in the first place, writes in and says the fat topic was discussed on July the 1st, 2009, 8 days ago. We scooped the for-profit media by 8 days. That's how long the report's been out there before anybody in the for-profit media deigned to take notice of it. And then started the article off with, Mississippi sure is fat! You know, Bob Kincaid sure is fat. There. I mean, we know it, all right? We know it. The question is, what are we going to do about it? And I'm not offering excuses. But you know what? If you want people to get off their asses and move, you got to give them somewhere to move to. And I'm sorry, we don't all live in places that has a Gold's Gym or an LA Fitness or Curves around the corner. Thanks, David. I appreciate it. 8 days. That's a pretty damn good scoop. Talking about poor counties, Cindy writes in from the Great Northwest. We don't have sidewalks either. It's too dangerous to walk or bike here. We have log trucks and gravel trucks zooming by at 60 miles an hour on two-lane roads with no sidewalks. No way. And I'm as far north as you can get. No. Cindy, we gotta get the geography right here. You're not north. You're northwest. The northwest is a wildly different thing from north. For instance, Southerners don't immediately feel visceral misgiving, distrust, and dislike when they hear about Washington State or Oregon. It's not like, you know, New York or Pennsylvania, redneck Southern conservative Yankees. So y'all don't get called Yankees. Where Cindy does live is mountainous country. And mountainous country gets treated wildly differently than flat land or urban land. So anyway, but I saw that and I wanted to bring it to your attention just to remind you, of what it is that makes it cool to do this and what it is that makes it cool to have your input and your participation in this whole process geared toward redefining and reinventing the American discussion and debate and dialogue. And, you know, you not only provide the information, you provide the means by which we continue to do this. We're heading toward the middle of July. It's looking kind of lean for August, I got to be honest. So, you know, we'll keep going as long as you want us to keep going. And if you've got a little to spare, you can always hit that PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com or the snail mail address on the website as well. Now, moving on to some other issues that kind of have to be mentioned. I don't know if you've heard about Kia coming to West Point, Georgia. It's one big party down in West Point, Georgia right now. West Point, Georgia, if I recall correctly, is a little dot on the map in west central Georgia, situated fairly close to Interstate 20, about halfway between Birmingham and Atlanta. I remember the exit signs from days gone by. And they are dancing in the streets in West Point, Georgia, because Kia, the Korean car manufacturer, has announced that they're going to build a plant there. Glory. They've jokingly taken to referring to West Point, Georgia, which I think is some sort of a home to legendary football broadcaster Keith Jackson. Just trivia. But they're calling it Kiaville now. West Point, Georgia, population 3,500. The plant will make Kia's Sorento sport utility vehicle. Oh, that'll last. They've already hired 500 people to work at the plant, and by the time the factory opens, they hope to hire 2,000 more. And then a cluster of Kia suppliers will employ another 7,500 workers. Time out. What kind of workers? Most likely non-union workers. That's why they're in Georgia. Do you suppose there might be some skilled auto workers in Indiana or Michigan or Illinois or Wisconsin or anywhere across what is disdainfully referred to as the Rust Belt who could use those jobs? Well, you know, but you can't be putting the new Kia plant there, because those working people might stand on their hind legs and act like human beings and demand to have a union and that the union be recognized so they can have collective bargaining and full benefits. Hello, West Point, Georgia. Yeah, I'm looking at a photograph right now that offends me all the way down to the marrow of my bones. Thank you, Jesus, for bringing Kia to our town. Yeah, no kidding. Thank you, Jesus, for bringing Kia to our town. Really? Jesus did that? No kidding. Jesus brought a Korean car manufacturer to pay substandard wages to a community in West Central Georgia. Kind of hard to... Well, you know, you can't beat Jesus at that game. When Jesus is out there union busting, your union's busted, brother. Thank you, Jesus, for bringing Kia to our town. And that very phrase just calls this to mind, and I won't miss an opportunity to play Iris DeMent. So pardon me for a moment, if you please.
And you know the sun's setting fast, and just like they say, nothing could ever last. Go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to your lover, your heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down on our town, on our town? Beside the red neon light, that's where I met my baby on one hot summer night. He was the tender and the order to bear. It's been 40 years and I'm still sitting here. But you know the sun's setting fast, and just when they say nothing could ever last. Go on now and kiss it goodbye, but hold on to heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye to our town, to our town. Can't you see the sun setting down on our town, on our town tonight? up the street beside that pretty brick wall. I bring them flowers about every day, but I just gotta cry when I think what they say. If they could see how the sun's setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. We'll go on now and kiss you goodbye, but hold on to your love, 'cause your heart's bound to die. Go on now and say goodbye. Fly, but I can't see too good. I've got tears in my eyes. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I don't wanna go. I love you, my town. You'll always live in my soul. But I can see the sun setting fast, and just like they say, nothing good ever lasts. So I'm gonna kiss you goodbye, but I hold you, my love. Go on now, say goodbye to my town, to my town. I can see the sun has gone down on my town, on my town tonight.
Yeah, the folks in West Point, Georgia, might as well go ahead and say goodbye now and get it over with because, see, West Point, Georgia is Georgia-ese for Spring Hill, Tennessee. Because they were the folks in Murray County, Tennessee were throwing this party 10, 12, 15 years ago. Oh, Jesus, thank you for bringing Saturn to Spring Hill. Ha! Glory, praise God, we're going to get us a new high school, and it's going to boom here. And it's go- oh, and the next thing you know, the real estate prices went through the roof. And little three-bedroom brick ranch-style houses became vastly overpriced and overvalued. Murray County sold its tax base out and overtaxed its infrastructure. And guess what? It's all over. Spring Hill and Murray County, Tennessee are singing Our Town even as we speak. And Kia will do the same thing to West Point, Georgia, because the only reason they're there is that they got Georgia to give up all kinds of concessions in the form of tax incentives in order to locate that plant there. And you know what? I don't want to sound like some prophet of doom or, you know, the prince of darkness or whatever. I'm sure they are happy in West Point, Georgia right now. Some crappy corporate chain restaurant has been turned into a Korean barbecue joint. Yum, yum. Another thing to add to the southern dietary problems, because that ain't exactly low-fat neither. And the folks in West Point that enjoyed sauerkraut? Oh, glory! Wait till they get their taste buds around some damn kimchi. Their eyes are going to cross. Good things are happening for them. They won't last. Because it's all predicated on an economic model that is designed to drive people in a shameless race to the bottom. Here we are, it's 2009, and we're trying to talk about sustainability, sustainable communities, communities that can weather economic storms and hold each other up through them. And what are they excited about in Georgia tonight? They're excited about another car plant that they're going to use as the sole prop in a local economy, and they're and right now they're just sort of eat up with the whole principle that the good times is here and good times gonna stay. Whew! But they aren't, because within that model they never do, and as soon as the tax incentives run out, and as soon as some other community underbids Kia, they will pack it all up and go somewhere else, waving bye-bye at the people in West Point, Georgia, who said, wait a minute, y'all was going to be our salvation. We's proud to have you Korean folk here, and we put a barbecue joint in, and we done at the kimchi, and everything, and we changed our culture. Where are you going? Oh, did you not hear? There's a free trade zone in Lower Murkistan. We're putting this plant there because they'll work cheaper than you do. Wait! Wait, damn it! We're a right-to-work state! We'll work for less! Just try us! We've been paying you for the jobs for the whole time anyway! Yeah, I know, suckers. Well, what are we supposed to do now? Well, you're supposed to die. We're capitalists, and we're corporatists, and we're done with you. Now you're just going to fade back into that red clay dust from which you had had ambitions of rising. Well, the good times are over now. It was fun. Let's not part bitterly. Let's just part. We can still be friends, and you can keep on buying Kias, even though the name of our car company is oddly reminiscent of those hateful little initials that mamas and daddies used to see coming back from Korea and Vietnam, killed in action Kia. Y'all keep buying our cars now, you hear? If you got the money for it, now that we're leaving. What's that old Upton Sinclair quote? I've heard Judy Bonds use it on a number of occasions. It's awfully hard to explain something to a man whose paycheck depends on him not understanding it. Maybe West Point, Georgia, instead of changing its name to Kiaville, could change its name to Upton Sinclair Town. West Point, Georgia doesn't want to understand that mono-economies are bad for communities, because right now there's a lot of money riding on West Point, Georgia not understanding that mono-economies are bad for communities. Our buddy David in South Carolina says Governor Granholm up there is bringing back investment for her state, and he says, I think there'll probably be union jobs, though he's not sure. Dateline Lansing, Governor Granholm returned from a 48-hour investment mission to Germany and Belgium with news that 4-2 Power Cell will soon begin a search for a West Michigan location pending approval of state and local incentives for a battery pack manufacturing facility. Okay. And I bet they will, indeed be union jobs. The question is, will the economy diversify around it? The days when you could count on one thing to save your community are gone.
Cindy says, thanks for playing Our House. I love it. I love those old country pieces. Cindy lives in an old country house. Hey, here's the trick, though. That's not an old country song. That's the genius of Iris DeMent. That's old only insofar as it's as old as when it was, as when she wrote it. It just sounds like the kind of music that we recognize as authentic, as opposed to the corporate-driven, focus-grouped, pitch-corrected crap that gets pumped out over for-profit radio day in and day out. Go buy yourself some Iris DeMent. You will not be disappointed. I've got some music that I want to share with you real soon. Probably won't do it tonight, but we'll do it very soon indeed. Some new stuff from John Kuntz. John's been on the show, and you know how magnificent his music is. Of course, he's out of the Portland, Oregon area. And can't wait to share that with you. Maybe we'll get John back on the show possibly at some point. So I'll be sharing that with you in the fairly near future. And speaking of music, and speaking of our buddy whom I just mentioned, David from South Carolina, David has been, David's a musician too. He's also damn good with the internet, smart guy. And has been a friend of the program for literally years, just about as long as we've been on the air, even going back to the terrestrial days. And earlier today, he dropped me a note, and I gave a listen. And David has been doing some musical creation, trying to put words and music to what it feels like for him when he listens to us and reads and studies and considers what mountaintop removal means for, as he puts it, for the folks downstream. And this, he says, this is a very, very rough cut, but it's his effort, and it's darn good too. So I thought we might give that a quick play as well. David Rosser, David from South Carolina, give a listen. I think you'll enjoy this.
Spanish moss hanging from the tree, lazy river ripples in the summer breeze, rolling thunder sound many miles away. Dark gray cloud, mess of my day. Lord, I swear, I hear a distant drum. Sound like to me, I hear the boldest tongue. Feels like to me the whole earth is shaking. seen. Veins turn into ashes, dreams into nightmares. Blood on the killer's hammer. He don't care. Once upon a time, sweet soul mama, you were a friend of mine. Oh, a gentle mother, she cared for us all. Now a battered lady, her back's to the wall.
Much David in South Carolina, Jim Dandy. And he says that it's most assuredly a work in progress, but it sounds like it's a work that's well on the way. Very, very good. About 6 minutes before the hour, a couple of minutes left in the program, just to wrap things up and put a tidy little bow around it. By now, I'm sure you know all about the Iowa Repiglick and Steve King. You know, this is the right wing freak who got on the floor of the House to say we wouldn't need no hate crimes bills. Them gay people would just quit telling us that they're gay. If we didn't know they was gay, we wouldn't get to beat them up. Yeah, and among other he's got a hit parade of sleaze and slime. Well, by now I'm sure you know that he was the only member of the House of Representatives to vote against placing a plaque in the Capitol Visitors Center that acknowledges the portion of the labor that went in to building the Capitol of the United States that was provided by slaves. It's pretty indefensible. And when he was called on it, early on he said, I opposed the slave labor resolution because it was put up for a vote before they considered the display of In God We Trust in the visitor center. You can't have nothing else before we consider In God We Trust. Well, that turned out to be a pretty stupid answer from a stupid man. Like I said, I'm all for what we had put forward earlier. IQ test before you can run for Congress. Yeah, absolutely. IQ under 100? Sorry, can't run. But so then he comes out, after that answer doesn't fly, he comes out and gives an interview to Radio Iowa. And he says now that he voted against commemorating slave labor in the building of the Capitol because it doesn't provide a balanced depiction of history. I would just add that there are about 645,000 slaves that were brought to the United States, and I'm with Martin Luther King Jr. on this. His documents, his speeches, I've read most of them. Most of them, Jesus, he's read most of them. Oh. And I agree with him. Almost every word that came out of him. Almost every word. Slavery was abhorrent, but it was also a fact of life in those centuries where it existed. You know, like in the Bible, where Paul says that slavery is an institution brought to us by Almighty God. It's just fact life. And of the 645,000 Africans that were brought here to be forcibly put into slavery in the United States, there were over 600,000 people that gave their lives in the Civil War to put an end to slavery. And I don't see the monument to that in the Congressional Visitor Center. And I think it's important that we have balanced depiction of history. Barney, who were you for in the Punic War? I was rooting for the Punics. It was an emancipation, Ange. It was a proclamation of emancipation. Yeah, you can't swing an umbrella in Washington, D.C. without hitting a memorial relating to the Union and the Civil War. But because there's not one in the Congressional Visitor Center, we can't. Steve King thinks we shouldn't have a commemoration of the fact that slave labor built the capital of our nation. Evil bastard. But that kind of goes hand in hand with this, and we'll wrap up real quick. Just in case you missed it, over at Crooks and Liars, a photograph. Barack Obama photoshopped into some sort of African warrior with rings around his neck and a bone through his nose. It is circulating on the interweb tubes as an email with the subject line, Obama Healthcare is coming soon. Nicole Bell over at Crooks and Liars notes, just when you think they can't sink any lower, conservatives dredge yet another layer of slime out of the swamp. What have we been saying around here for so long? Yep. Barack Obama. But, you know, and the reason they did that is because there's two men. It's not a balanced portrayal of Barack Obama because there's all those portrayals of Barack Obama as a Muslim. We need some of him as an uncivilized Mandingo warrior with a bone through his nose. Jesus. So let's quit there. What do you say? Yeah. A witch doctor with a bone through his nose. Let's quit. That's enough. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening. I rather enjoyed the filibobster tonight. I hope you did as well. And we'll try this again tomorrow night. What do you say? Thanks to everybody who helps keep this going with your kind contributions to keeping conversation radio alive. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Literally saving the format, the genre, it's in its own right since 2002. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The bravest, hardest working people I know. And you know why I say that. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
In with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all. A minute and so past the hour, past 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. Welcome to this evening's edition of Conversation Radio from wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. Looking forward to hitting a lot of topics this evening, many of them of your choosing, some of mine. I've been, over the last few days, I've been reading a few articles, what little information is getting out. About the, let's see, what's the official word for it? Yes, the unrest in Xinjiang province, China, and in the capital there, Urumqi, far in the west of the People's Republic of China. Where the Chinese government, for years, as they have done in Tibet, have been engaged in a process of depopulation and relocation, in effect, attempting a slow and quiet genocide of the Uyghurs, for whom that is their native land. They're accomplishing this by dispossessing Uyghurs as well as by moving in. Vast numbers of traditional, what we tend to think of as traditional, racially Han Chinese settlers.
And apparently the Uyghurs, by virtue of an unfortunate incident in a sweatshop somewhere in, I believe, Guangdong province, simply had enough and began manifesting their displeasure with the way they were being treated. Because there is something essentially wrong. I think it strikes the human spirit as violative whenever we see ethnic groups of people simply being erased and displaced by another group. What? You used to live here? Not anymore. We're going to build us some new towns. They're going to be our towns. You can go somewhere else. Right? Yeah. And so, if nothing else, mark my objection to the displacement and the diminution, the deliberate diminution of the genetics of what are referred to as the Uyghur people in Western China. Information coming out of Western China has been sketchy, to say the least. The Associated Press reporting yesterday that thousands of Chinese Red Army troops have poured into Urumqi, China. That's the capital city of Xinjiang. And they are ostensibly trying to separate the feuding Han and Uyghur peoples. The Uyghurs, you see, are now a minority in their own capital city. There are 2.3 million people in Urumqi. Less than 1.65 million of them are Uyghur. Marauding groups of vigilantes carrying sticks and clubs are going through the traditionally Muslim Uyghur neighborhoods, rousing and beating members of that ethnic group, the Uyghurs. They're being tormented for being Uyghur, and they're being tormented for being Muslim. Chinese President Hu Jintao has left Italy, where he was supposed to participate in the Group of Eight summit. There was considerable embarrassment over his having to do that. At least 140 people were killed at one stroke on Sunday. 140 Uyghurs, their bodies were tossed into trucks and taken away by Chinese security forces. Still, despite that reporting, information is sparse coming out of the region. People's Republic of China not wanting the rest of the world to see what is going on, the trouble they have maintaining order among their subjugated peoples. As Americans, of course, we have lost we didn't lose it. We know where it went and we know who took it. But over the last 9 years, we have ceded the moral high ground in being able to complain about conduct like this by virtue of what we, in turn, have done to the peoples of Afghanistan and Iraq, and to a certain extent Pakistan. And it is a hallmark of all of these uprisings, whether it be unrest in Urumqi, Xinjiang, China, or in the streets of Tehran, that an authoritarian government aided by elements of the civilian population do all they can to quash information contrary to the official party line. We know, of course, that it happens as well in North Korea. There are many